And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 792. Coming at you on a Monday night here, a little before Thanksgiving. First off, hope everybody has a fun holiday weekend, safe holiday weekend. We'll get to that at the end of the show, probably. Wish you guys a happy Thanksgiving. But we're going to recap some of the recent news because, man, trades are happening in baseball. And we're going to talk some second half, you know, stud performances, basically, and what do we think heading into 2026 as the draft season continues to ramp up. In order to help me break that down, you got my co-host as usual. You can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tid, how you doing, my friend?
Doing pretty well, Bubba. Yeah, it's an exciting week. Thanksgiving coming up, big day of football, which I'll still end up watching, even though I haven't been watching that much football. But yeah, it's as the weeks go on, I'm getting more and more antsy for fantasy baseball to start for myself. I know you've got that ball rolling like over a month ago, so you've already – yeah, you're way ahead of me, as everybody knows. But I was going through the – so one of the things I do in my prep is I write down all the free agents using the MLB.com tracker. And I had – and you kind of put on one of the things for the, we're going to talk about tonight in the outline are the non-tenders potentially. And the list that I had grew a little bit because of all the guys that were non-tendered since like a week ago. So there's like 300 free agents or something. It's almost that money. It's insane. So – and because of that, that is why I'm waiting, because there's a lot of things that are going to change. So I need to make sure some pieces are in place and the dust settles before I can start putting money into the fantasy again.
That's a smart man's move. That's a very smart move on your behalf. But it was a wild tender deadline is what I'll call it. Not swipe left and right tender, different tender deadline. it was wild. They both can be wild. Don't get me wrong. But, oh, yeah. But yeah, it's... there were some names that popped up, like when you first see them, like, oh my goodness. But then when you take a step back from like the baseball sense of it, not the fantasy, you're like, okay, I kind of get where this is going. We'll talk about some of those here in a second. But let's kick it off with the big trade that happened. It was yesterday. Marcus Semien is traded to the New York Mets for Brandon Nimmo, a 1-for-1 trade, which is also very refreshing to see. Not a bunch of players to be named later and prospects we have no clue who they are, Ben. So this was great. There's some baseball people saying this is more the Mets want to get rid of a contract that doesn't, you know, Nimmo's signed till 2030, Semien signed till 2028. Okay, let's start with the Ranger or the Mets side of it, Ben. They lose Brandon Nimmo, so now you're looking at a potential outfield of Soto, Tyrone Taylor, who was tendered a contract, and Jeff McNeil, and now you got Marcus Semien at second base. What's your thoughts on Semien joining the Mets? And one last thing I will give here. Semien has an ADP of about 270 right now.
That's really far down. He was like a 100, like top 100 pick last year still, I think, right?
Yep.
Give or take. Yeah, that's a big fall from grace. And it's deserved. Semien had a sub-100 WRC plus, probably for the first time in a long time. But looking at his page and being in New York, I have a lot of Met fans and there's people that I know, and they were the ones I heard from weren't too happy about the trade. And then I also went, then I heard someone told me to go on the SNY Instagram post about the trade, and all the comments are pretty negative, and it was pretty entertaining to see the Met fans already freaking out, and it's not even December yet. But I agree. I told everyone that I talked to that I felt like the Mets lost this trade, and then of course the speculation is, okay, are they going to sign Bellinger? Are they going to sign Kyle Tucker? They assigned both of them. Who knows? So definitely not done yet. And yeah, I wouldn't expect McNeil to be the projected left fielder for the Mets going into the season. And there's a good chance that even though Taylor's, I think, okay defensively, he probably won't be the starting center fielder either. And even, I don't know if Ronnie Mauricio will be the DH. There's still a lot that can change for the Mets. But I think it's curious. Maybe they like Semien's defense, which I don't even know how he grades out defensively anymore. It's just in terms of like looking at the fantasy angle, I think it's definitely a loss for the Mets.
Yeah, I know it's an upgraded defense. Does not say a lot because the Mets defense at second base wasn't great to begin with, but it is an upgrade at the position for Semien. But to your point, some really smart people in our Discord mentioned it, that this seems like the beginning of multiple moves for the Mets. Like they're going to sign some guys, more guys could be traded. Like there's a litany of things that could be taking place here. This is like step one of said process. And by losing 2 years of the Nimmo deal, it opens up more money later on if you do sign a big free agent, so on and so forth. So it's kind of a, there's a domino effect that seems like is coming to New York so it's hard to fully analyze, as you mentioned. On the flip side, Texas Rangers, they get Brandon Nimmo. He'll be signed again until 2030, as we mentioned. His ADP is 160. Brandon Nimmo, the Rangers came out on Monday, said he will be the starting right fielder for the Rangers. Brandon Nimmo's played at least 150 games in four straight seasons, Ben. At least 23 home runs in three straight seasons, 13 or more steals in two straight seasons. There's a lot of consistency with Brandon Nimmo. Seems like a big upgrade from a guy that was non-tendered in Adelis Garcia. What's your thoughts on this Nimmo to Texas situation? He is 32, I'll say that much.
Yeah, but he's shown after being hurt for most of his career. Yeah, you mentioned four straight years now of 560-plus at-bats for Nimmo, and he's starting to steal bases now. The only thing – actually, no, because he had that down average in 2024, but it seemed, I think it was like BABIP-driven. He bounced back nicely to .262 last year. Pretty good OPS. Nothing great. It's still below 800, but he's a good real-life player, and I don't think his outfield defense is that good, but that's all right. And the Rangers, looking at their lineup, the way it's projected now, they have Carter, Nimmo, Langford in the outfield. And I heard some talk about Josh Smith not being probably the second baseman for the Rangers, even though they have liked him in the last couple of years because the Rangers have had a ton of injuries, and Smith has basically become a full-time player for them at multiple positions because of his flexibility and the fact that they just need people to fill in. But I could see them making a move, the Rangers, for second base now. I don't know who they have in the minors. Maybe that could get called up, but yeah, it's still very early. And the Garcia fall has been pretty bad. I took a shot on him last year, only on one team, luckily, but I think he could be toast at this point, just based on how his profile was and how he's kind of just collapsed in the last couple of years.
Fully collapsed. Almost, I don't want to be that guy, but I'm going to be that guy. Feels like he might have been having some additional help for a couple years there that stopped helping him, if that makes sense. Some pharmaceutical help that made him balloon and then just disappeared from the face of the planet. Someone will sign him. He'll be a fourth outfielder probably somewhere, or he'll sign with like the White Sox. Him and Lou Bob would be perfect together. Like, they are peas in a pod in that regard. But the fall of Adelis Garcia – it wasn't too long ago when it's like, okay, do you want Rosarena or Adelis? They're the same player, it felt like. And that is not the case anymore. The Cubs, they signed Phil Maton to a two-year deal. Phil Maton was closing for Texas at times towards the end of last season. I know you're just getting into your draft research, but if you had to, because it seems like a moving part right now, Daniel Palencia has an ADP of 165. Phil Maton has an ADP of 467. Who do you like to close in Chicago?
I still think it would be Palencia. I don't think Maton is really a closer unless he has to be one. And that's kind of what happened with him last year. He was kind of just one of the last guys left. And in Texas, I think, is where he came from. So, and he was raised from Texas. And I did add him in the main event that did really well. So I took a stab, and he was fine, Maton, but I just don't see him be – because this is looking at the raw stats from last year. Palencia had 22 saves. Maton had 5. I could see Maton just being like the old setup guy that just is stable. And they have, but also, too, with that said, Palencia did get hurt last year. I think he had a shoulder issue. So maybe if you do take Palencia in a DC or a 50, maybe you try to get Maton towards his ADP. Because I do like doing that in a DC with my closers. I might try to handcuff the more risky of the two that I have, if this is one way to put it. So he's definitely not off the board in DC's Maton.
Yep, the piggyback handcuff, whatever you prefer to call it, makes a ton of sense. Little hint here, the next episode dropping on Wednesday will be with an NFBC 50s focused show. So if you're into draft and hold formats, check that out. And on the Bubba the Bloom feed, it is draft and hold week. So we got a lot of that kind of discussion coming your way. Just something to keep in mind as a little segue for you there. All right, let's talk about some of these non-tender guys. We'll just kind of fly through them. I got a couple pages up. I'll give the more like relevant names. Like, these aren't relevant. Like Ramon Urias, he'll get picked up somewhere and he'll play a million positions. JJ Bodega let go by the A's. The Red Sox didn't keep Nathaniel Lowe. That was not surprising, but he'll get picked up somewhere, Ben. So that's interesting. I almost texted you, but I didn't. T's and P's. Albert Suarez is no longer a Baltimore Oriole. So that problem's been solved.
I mentioned at the start of the show how I was updating the free agents, and I saw him. I first thing I thought of was you. I'm like, oh man, Bubba can't draft him now.
Yep. I saw that. I'm like, oh, they're saving me from myself. This is great. Yeah. Okay, so we'll start with the Rangers here, because most of those names, like, yeah, we kind of know who they are, but whatever. Rangers, you already mentioned Adelis Garcia. This one's interesting. Jonah Heim, non-tendered by the Texas Rangers. So that means for now, Kyle Higashioka seems to be the main dog in Texas, Ben. Again, you're just doing your starting out your draft research. How does that change anything for your like for Higashioka? Jonah Heim, I think, will get picked up to be a backup somewhere. He's still good enough to do that. But definitely one of the more surprising moves, I think.
Yeah, that is. But Heim, after that 1 year when he had a ton of RBIs, I think he's been 2 years removed now from that season. He just kind of just turned into a shell of what he was that season. And I actually preferred Higashioka over Heim when I was drafting DC's last season. And looking at Higgy's stats, he kind of underwhelmed because he hit 17 homers in 2024 and limited playing time. And he had 11 and 303 at bats last year, Higashioka, which is a great pace, but the problem is that with Heim there, they didn't want to commit to playing one of them in DH, even though it happened from time to time. It was a really like a 50-50 split between the two of them. So as of things now, it looks good for Higgy, but I've been saying, there's a ton of free agent catchers still, and there's a good chance that the Rangers sign somebody. I don't know who it would be, but Higashioka is also 35. He's been a career backup, and he wasn't even a full-timer last year. So I would just be cautious if you're thinking that if you take him in a draft right now, Higashioka, that he may not return full PT come the season.
Yep, I agree. I think he's good for at least 60%, something along those lines. So, and you're drafting a little catcher too, might get a little bump again. Time will tell. Maybe they go and sign somebody else or trade someone, or a lot of changes can happen there. The Rays, they let Christopher Morel go. I know Morel had a fall from grace, Ben, but still a ton of power. And, you know, maybe before I completely talk out of school here, it feels like he's really young, but we pull up. Yeah, he's 26. So that one, I get it, but at the same time, I'm like, someone's going to scoop him up and give him another shot.
You'd think so, just because of, yeah, you mentioned his age. The Rays, they have Yandy, Lau, Caminero. Yeah, they have plenty of outfitters last year. They don't really have a spot for him unless they wanted him to platoon with Lowe, which wouldn't have been the worst thing. But it looks like Brandon. Am I screwing up their names? No, Brandon. Yeah, it's Lowe, Brandon Lowe. I've been out of speaking about the Lows and the Lows for a long time. Yeah, Brandon Lowe. He stayed healthy, and I think Morel was on a short side platoon at some point last year. But
yeah, he was.
The Rays are very analytical, and they see the K rate for Morel, which was almost 36% last year, and his XBA was 216 because of it. And they probably just think that he's kind of a lost cause. Maybe they tried working with him, and whatever they did didn't work. So I don't know. He could just not be fit for a major league as a major leaguer, Morel, and maybe that's it. But to your point, I think someone will try to sign him, and he'll at least get invited to spring training somewhere.
Yeah, I can't remember who said it in our Discord. It might have been Martin or this, when the move happened, it said your future KBO home run champ Christopher Morel, like he would fit that mold of a guy that goes over and just drops bombs all over the place. A few others here, like I'm an MJ Melendez supporter, so I think like he's one of those guys that always frustrates. The underlying skills look great, production never does. So he got let go by the Royals. Someone should jump on that one. Andy Ibañez, super utility, let go by the Tigers. Mike Tauchman did not get tendered a contract by the White Sox, a team that it really has no identity. It feels like they are getting younger. I'll give them that much. But Tauchman's like OBP skills, if you're a WRC plus guy, for what he brings you at his price, one of the better quote unquote values in baseball in real life perspective. So that one kind of surprised me a little bit. I don't know if you care to talk about Tauchman, but I'll bring him up because that was one of those that I know he streamed a lot, especially on righty heavy weeks. He'd lead off, and in a 15 teamer, he had a little value to him.
Yeah, I had him on a DC or two last year, Tauchman. I even added him in my Fab Leagues at some point because he was leading off for the White Sox and having some okay production. And yeah, I have a little soft spot for him, but he kind of broke out with the Yankees back in 2019, Tauchman, when they got him from the Rockies. And he showed some potential then, but he's kind of never had a year that good since then. But yep. If he does sign somewhere, he'll probably be a fourth outfielder, if not a starter. And it makes sense for the White Sox not to keep him, because Talkman's what, he's 35, 34, he's 34 right now. He's going to be 35 in next month. So, and they're completely rebuilding now. So it makes sense that they wouldn't want to clog up an outfield spot with him, but I could see him easily signing with an okay team, but it depends on how good the team is. Will really determine how relevant Talkman would be for playing time. But if he does sign as a starter, I think he's interesting in draft and holds.
All right. Last team in the AL that we'll discuss here. Yankees got rid of Mark Leiter Jr., Scott Efros, Jake Cousins, and Ian Hamilton. They completely just let everybody in their bullpen go, it feels like. And they're starting over because Luke Weaver is already a free agent. I know this, so it's not a ton of fantasy questions, but I guess I'll get your thoughts as a Yankees fan. Talk about having to reload the pen right about now.
Well, I won't really miss most of those guys you just named, because Mark Leiter, he might be the worst fielding pitcher I've ever seen. He is horrible. And his pitching was just as bad or worse last year. But I pulled up the roster resource for them. They have Bednar still, Duvall's hit or miss. Cruz and Duvall are the same guy. They throw so hard, get keys, but they're kind of wild.
Very volatile.
Yeah, Tim Hill's great. He's a great lefty. He's awesome to watch pitch just in general.
They re-signed him, so that's a good bring back, yes.
Yeah, so then they have Yarbrough, so they have three openings. So, but yeah, that's a lot of guys. Well, a lot of those guys were hurt last year too, so they just had a ton of dead weight to lose. And I think Bednar will be the closer. I don't think they would, because he was so good for them, and they're pretty loyal when it comes to that stuff. So I think they'll just be signing like set up pieces. But yeah, as long as they don't re-sign Leiter, I was so happy when I saw that he was added to the free agent list tonight. I was very happy with that.
I hope Bednar's the closer. I've been drafting him like he's the closer, so let's continue to do that, because
I would
closers go extremely early in these DCs, as people know, and Bednar is like the last of, to me, the top tier. I wouldn't say elite, but top tier relievers, and his ADP is at 57.5 right now. So it's like, if you don't want to go early, but you still want one of the top end guys, I've been playing that chicken game with him, and so have him on a couple squads right now, and I'm playing as if he is. All right, let's go to the National League real quick. Again, it's a bunch of names, nothing too crazy from the fantasy realm, but just things to keep an eye on. Like Evan Phillips, once a closer for the Dodgers, gone. That's one to keep in mind. Joey Weimer is back as a member of the Giants now. For those that know, you know why I love that so much, but we don't get into that story for the 12,000th time on this show. Honestly, Ben, when it comes to the National League, not a lot of the biggest name outside of Rodri Munoz, of course. The Rockies let Michael Toglia go. That's pretty much the biggest National League move right there. The rest of them, it's a bunch of like relievers and backups and guys who get minor league deals. Well, Toglia might get a minor league deal too, but Michael Toglia got let go, and he's already showing footage. He's at Driveline right now trying to improve things, so we know how that goes. Hey, at least the kid's not taking it like he's like, okay, gotta work harder, cool, okay, I respect that. What's your thoughts there? Because that could be like a bunch of moving parts. You could look at it from, you know, Toglia could sign somewhere. Do you take a chance on him in your DC still, because he's still super cheap? Or you could look at it from the Rockies' perspective. They now have, you know, the first baseman situation. They have Troy Johnson and Burnable potentially, like, and Blaine Crim. It's nothing pretty in Colorado. So what's your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I pulled up the Rockies depth chart. I'm surprised to see Troy Johnson there. I didn't know he was on the Rockies.
Neither did I until I just looked at it right now.
Oh, yeah, he was claimed off waivers from the Marlins, because I knew he was in the Marlins. Yeah, so it happened this month. But I guess everything I said about Morel could be applied to Toglia, except for
– true.
I guess they've had decent success in seasons at a time. But the thing with Toglia is that Coors was masking all of his issues, or it could even mask all of his issues. So that was – why I was I never actually drafted Toglia last year. I did add him at times just to see what if, but he has to get that K rate down. Otherwise, he will be right with Morel wherever they end up. But I guess to your point about taking him late, Toglia in a DC, I wouldn't want him to be my corner or like my first backup corner. I'd want him to be like probably my third first baseman if the ADP aligns with that. I wouldn't pull him up just to draft him, but I would definitely want some more reliable guys ahead of him.
Yeah, he'd have to be a late round dart going, okay, I need, yeah, his ADP 650 basically right now. So
okay, that's a decent price then for that third first baseman.
Yeah, like literally like when I pull them up, there's not any first baseman even around there, really. That's okay. Like, Jormin Bernabal is going at 608. And then after, that's the only one that's closest one to the north. Then Ty France at 664. So it's pretty much, you know, pretty much Tuglia's world in the 600s right now. If you want to, at least if you're looking at upside picks, you know, there's at least a ceiling there. He's probably got much better than those other options. Just has to find a home. Like, be perfect in Chicago with the White Sox. But, you know, teams like that could utilize a player like him and see where it goes. All right, Ben, enough of that. Let's talk about some second half heavy performers. Like, I'm looking at guys that it's a combination of these. They kind of broke out. Maybe some we didn't even know who they were. Maybe some had bad first half, turned into good second half. We won't hit them all. Michael Harris will not be on this show. Sorry. Talked about him enough. I've written about him. I've drafted him in 2 out of 4 leagues. So we've moved on from that one. So I just want to clear that up right now before that comes out later. But we'll talk about a lot of names that people are having questions also in your draft and hold seasons right now, between seeing on in Discord, seeing on, you know, Twitter, whatever. I'm seeing these names all over the place. Ben added a few names as well that we will get to. But in typical fashion to this show, I just went to the leaderboards and searched from July 17th on, the second half of the season. Ben made a custom board. And he was able to sort things better because this is the difference between me and him. He comes prepared for this. So before we dig in to some of these names that we're going to discuss, Ben, what's a name that stood out to you towards the top that we will discuss? Because I actually had a text message from a friend of the show earlier today asking if this name has been discussed on any of my shows, and we have not. So let's do it now.
All right, so a little context. What Bubba's referring to is I made a custom leaderboard in FanGraphs that I use for my personal sheet when I do my rankings, which is less than a month away. So I'm ready to go, but I did it for the second half only. So it's just to align with the list that Bubba created for the show. And what FanGraphs does is it automatically sorted it by ex-WOBA, which is one of the stats that I want to look at. And it was the second name on the list that stood out to me. So of course it's Aaron Judge, who was the second half leader in ex-WOBA, but Yordan Alvarez was number 2. Judge had a 471 ex-WOBA, and then Yordan had a 446. And I keep hearing on pods I listen to how everyone's out on Yordan because of the injuries. And I looked at his stats, and his EV, his barrel, he walked as much as he struck out in the second half. Yordan's hard hit was above 60%. His XBA was 355. There's so much dark green on my sheet for him. And I'm like, I think people are just forgetting about how bad the injury, like how bad it was for his season. But then I looked at Yordan's stats, and despite him like just being hurt all the time, well, everyone says he's always hurt, but if you look at his last 4 seasons before 2025, Yordan was essentially 30 homers every year, almost 90 runs and 90 RBIs, and he hit about 300 despite the injured moniker that comes with him. And he had plate appearances of, he was almost above 500 plate appearances every year. He was at 496 in 2023, but he still had 31 homers and 97 RBIs and hit 293. So I was thinking his ADP is a little bit later than what it actually is. Yordan's like a middle of the third rounder, and actually more like a late third rounder in 15s right now. Mm-hmm. But I was saying to Bubba, like, he is going to be a target of mine once I start drafting, because util only aside, I was fine taking Brent Rooker last year, and I took Ozuna. It didn't work out. I've taken Shohei. I don't really care now about the UT only if the hitter's good enough. So if Yordan falls, I am scooping that up, because I think he has the whole offseason rest now, and he'll DH his fair share. The Astros are going to be smart with him. They know how to handle him. The hand thing, I think, I don't know if he had surgery or not, but he's just a stud, and I think he just the poor year on a as a whole, just masked how good he was in the second half. And I don't think many people are talking about that.
Yes. I'm glad you brought that up, because I kind of blanked Yordan out of my head completely. So I'm a part of that group that doesn't care about his second half as much as maybe I should, to your point, because we were talking before the show. That's why I said I wanted to start off with Yordan, because you brought up some great points. And one point I'm not sure if you did make is, maybe you did, dude's only gonna be 29 this year to top it off. He's still extremely young. He's been an injured young, that's why I call him Greg Oden. He looks like him. But there's a lot of resemblances in that regard. But you mentioned that this 30 plus home runs, this is a world where we talk about power depleting. It's hard to find power. Well, you get a guy with great power, with great average, and like you said, 97 or more RBIs in three seasons, 86 or more in four straight. The runs scored 88 or more in three out of four. Like, we know he's not going to steal bags. He's basically Vladito with more pop. Not the same as Vladito plays almost every day, so his average carries even more weight, and he'll have more runs and RBIs more often, not all the time. Like, it's probably closer than we think. So that's why we used to compare those two when they got drafted next to each other. Now they're going like 30 picks apart. It's a big difference. And one's util only, one's first base. So that obviously can come into your debates if you want. But just crossing Jordan off might be a flaw of mine. Now, I wouldn't do what my co-host Ryan Bloomfield did and take him in a gladiator draft. I'm not sure that's the best approach to Jordan Alvarez. Nobody's going to miss time. And you want to be able to replace those at-bats if you can. But, at least I should be more open even in draft and hold formats to rostering a Jordan, to your point. So that's why I wanted to bring that up to start the show, because I think myself and many are guilty of just being like, you know what, he's always hurt all the time. Last year was horrible, blah, 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 all those narratives. And maybe we should take a step back and realize, well, he's actually pretty darn good. Plus, you get to replace him now. Like I told you before the show, Ben, does your replacement hurt that overall production line? That's a whole other question. Like, because one thing you really want him for is that average. That average is pretty sweet. So does your replacement hurt that average a lot where it's not worth it? That's a whole other discussion. So maybe he is good for a gladiator. You take the 120 games and you walk away. So maybe, like usual, foot in my mouth real quick. So that's another discussion point as well. Who knows?
Well, that's why I think we always say, like, it's good that we've both flip-flopped on people before when we've talked it out like this. So it's another example. And the one thing I also add, so we talked about the util only. Right now, the projected infield for the Astros is Peña at short, Altuve second, Correa third, Walker first, Paredes DH. So Jordan's probably going to get outfield pretty quickly.
He should, especially because Paredes is, they're saying his hamstring will be like 70% by opening day. So he has to
duct tape together.
Yeah, that ain't playing the field. Now, you don't want Jordan in the field if you can prevent it, but, you know, it is what it is. And they've said they want Walker to play as much as possible, which I would too. I would want Christian Walker's bat in the lineup also. But, yeah, we'll see. I'm with you. At least you've opened my eyes on this one. And that's, again, why I love podcasting, because we can talk things out. I learn by doing, learn by talking, not by just reading stuff. So definitely can. That's why I put my foot in my mouth a lot. The more I say things out loud, it's like, oh, wait a minute. That makes sense now. Something finally clicked in this behemoth brain of mine. All right, let's move on to the list at hand. And we're going to start off with a name that is very popular in the drafting landscape. He plays for the Washington Nationals. He burst onto the scene in the second half last year. Since July 17th, he hit .333, 7 homers, 5 steals, 37 runs, 33 RBIs, struck out like 15% of the time. Currently, Dalen Lyle has an ADP, Ben, of 212 in your draft champions last 10 drafts. Last month of drafting, 212. I have a few shares as my fifth outfielder or early sixth outfielder. I'm a fan of what we saw from Dalen Lyle. I also understand that he's 22, going to be 23, so there could be growing pains to go with this. But with all the hype behind his name, I was honestly surprised to see this ADP, Ben. When you look at what we saw last year in the second half, or basically all we got to see of Dalen Lyle, where do you sit on him? Because if we believe this is the player he was in that we saw, the 212 is pretty sweet.
Yeah, he's projected to hit third for the Nationals right now, Lyle is. He had 9 homers, 8 steals, and 321 at-bats. So that's a little behind the 2020 pace, but to your point, he's only 22. He had almost at 300. So that was a great debut for Lyle. Let me look at something real quick. So he's a left-handed hitter, and he faced – 78% of his at-bats were versus righties last year, which is close to being a platoon bat, but it's underneath the threshold that I use for myself, which is 8%. So there's a good chance that Lyle's an everyday outfielder for the Nationals, and you're getting him at a pretty good price, because once you get into the 200, that's when you start seeing the platoon bats really appear, at least in the outfield. And there's a chance that, like I said, he's a left-handed hitter, but I don't know what his splits are. It's okay.
I got him
for Lyle. Okay, yeah, if you want to look him up.
I got him right here. Versus righties, he hit .312 with 7 of his homers. Versus lefties, .254 with 2 of his homers. A little bit of a dip there. And if you want to go to some extracurricular stats. He had a 91 WRC plus versus lefty, 144 versus righties, a 127 ISO versus a 220, so on and so forth. So a 22% K rate versus lefties compared to a 14% versus righties.
Those numbers weren't terrible versus lefties. There's
no, like they're obviously not as good, but they're not bad at all. I think for a 22-year-old, that's pretty good.
No. Yeah, and then so according to – so I'm not big on the defensive stuff, but I was looking at his Savant fielding metrics, and he's pretty poor in OAA, outs above average, and his arm value is pretty poor based on Savant, but he's only 22. Maybe he's actually better than that. So I was wondering if his defense could keep him in the lineup versus lefties, and there's a chance, and the Nationals are probably won't compete again, so they probably just want to see him get playing time. But we said that about Luis Garcia, and look, he never faces lefties either, but he's kind of bad versus him now. But maybe played against him more, he'd be better. Who knows? But yeah, I think Lyle at this range is a good pick. And I had him at times last year, to your point, how he was a free agent ad. And I think I cut bait a little too soon on a couple of teams. But yeah, he was definitely a pretty good rookie standout.
Yep. He was not too shabby. Let's head to Tampa Bay, a name that is always kind of challenging. It feels like in draft season, like, do you believe this skill set? To make matters worse now, they're going back to the Trop. There's been a lot of discussion in the Discord about Yandy Diaz today, so I want to bring him up on the show. In the second half last year, Ben, he played in 59 games, hit 326, which is like always a good batting average guy. That was outstanding. 11 home runs, 36 runs scored, 30 RBIs, 15% K rate. All the things you want to see from Yandy, more power than you'd expect potentially. ADP is close to 150 right now, so he's like definitely towards the back end because first base goes early and often right now because I know how bad the position is. It feels like it's pretty top heavy on draft day. So he's one of the last ones before you really hit a cliff. Where are you at on Yandy Diaz? The 11 home runs in the second half, like some seasons that might be close to all he gets in reality. Going back to the Trop could mask things. Are you in, out? What's your thoughts on Yandy?
I've always been out on Yandy. I don't know if I ever actually taken him on a team. But 25 homers and 300 average is really nice last year. Look at his spray chart. A lot of homers to right field. So he would be great as a Yankee, to your point. Let's see. Do you think Savant has the Trop back as the Rays home ballpark? Probably not.
I doubt it.
Yeah, because for 2025, it's saying he would have 28 homers in Tampa, which is more than he actually had, which I would not buy. So I'm assuming they're using storage Steinbrenner as the field last year, which makes sense. But so looking at his metrics, Yandy had a 53.6 ground ball rate and a 25% fly ball rate, which are both very dark red on my sheet. And his barrel rate was 5.6%. So I would not expect anything close to those homer totals again this year for Yandy. He should have a great average because his K rate's like 15%. That's what it was last year. XBA was 281. So he'll be good for runs, RBIs, and an average. So if that fits what you need, I guess it's good. And I have looked at ADP for first base and passing. And after pick 100, there's a lot of names that I'm like, wow, those aren't really the best names at that point in the draft, at least from what I've remember from last year. So maybe Yandy stands out for that reason, but this got to be cognizant that the power probably won't be back to 25 homers.
Agreed. Like, it's one of those, if you're really good in power, say you got a Big Meat Pete, say you got a few other guys, like you got Aaron Judge on your team, and like, I want more batting average. Okay, sure. Corner infielder, Yandy Diaz or whatever, come on down. But don't plan on, like, he had 22 home runs a few seasons ago, but that was mainly first half. Like, we remember seeing the dip real quickly in the home run to fly ball. Like, it was a great start that did not sustain. Like, I don't think there's ever a full season in the Trop where that does sustain. We'll see, but I doubt it. But yeah, if you need batting average help, I get it. I usually don't have any Yandy on my team. I've at least told myself to keep him in mind this year. I usually just cross him straight off, but at least keep him on the radar. Now let's talk about a first baseman that's going at an ADP of 377 right now in the last 10 drafts. A player that started the season on the IL with a broken hand. A player that in the second half woke up in Spencer Horwitz. He ended up hitting 305 in the second half in 62 games for the Pirates with 9 home runs, 36 runs, 35 RBIs, walking 12.6 and striking out 13.9% of the time. So very solid plate discipline skills. But more importantly, showed a little bit of pop there in Pittsburgh, hit for a pretty good average. Those numbers allowed him to hit 272 with 11 home runs in the season, to my point. Didn't do much in the first half, blew up in the second half. And basically free in drafts right now, Ben. Is this a guy that we should be paying more attention to as he's going to go back to Pittsburgh? Again, pitcher's ballpark, but that price point seems like he should be able to help a fantasy team.
Yeah, he was someone that was kind of intriguing last year, Horwitz, because of the dual eligibility and that the fact that he would have been a full-time player finally. But then he got hurt early in the year, and I was completely oblivious to how well he did to finish the season, Horwitz. He's projected to hit fourth for the Pirates right now. Of course, it's early. That could easily change, but the Pirates don't sign people, so maybe Horwitz ends up hitting second now because they trade someone away. Who knows? But he should hit near the top of the lineup. Still not a lot of power for him. His barrel rate last year was 7%, actually better than Yandy's. Hard hit wasn't that good, though. But, yeah, his contact, the K and the walk rates, the XBA, they all support that he should be a batting average boost, Horwitz. And he's going, like, pick 370, it looks like-ish, 376. So he's a great – I don't know if I want to start him as my CI, but he'd be a good first baseman off the bench in a DC, I think.
Yeah, he definitely gives you tons of depth, I think, between CI, util, first base, just for batting average support. I don't believe he's a massive power guy. Maybe gets to 15 if you're feeling it. But he's a poor man's Yandy is the way I look at it. He's a poor man's Diaz, and you can live with that, I think.
It's kind of like Shanwell, maybe a little bit better, but no speed.
That's a great, great comp, and Shanwell goes way earlier. We just said like 377 with Horwitz. Shanwell goes 311, so it's closer than I thought. But yeah,
that's four rounds.
That's a perfect comp, actually. Really, really good comp. All right, let's head to catcher. Why not? Let's talk about Dylan. Don't call me Dirk Dingler. he's been my catcher too a couple leagues already. Big fan of Dirk. ADP's 208. Finished the season hitting 278 with 13 home runs, 54 runs, and 57 RBIs, which is great for a catcher too, in my opinion. And now you look what he did in the second half, though, even better. 296 average with 5 home runs, 28 runs, and 21 RBIs. Dingler is 27 years old. He's one of their higher catching prospects for the Tigers. Got the job when Jake Rogers got hurt. Didn't give it back when Jake Rogers came back. He should be the catcher one in Detroit. I just wanted to throw him out there, Ben. Any thoughts on Mr. Dingler?
Well, it took you, what, 4 players before we named a catcher? So not too bad. That's a...
Yep.
It's a little later than I would have expected, but it's a good catcher to call out. And, I don't know if you remember, but I made the mistake of cutting Dingler when I got some guys back this past season. And I wish I held on because he hit like almost 280, which is amazing for a catcher and good playing time. And the metrics support it. He has a pretty good XBA last year on the season as a whole. Doesn't strike out a whole lot. The one thing that will hurt is that he'll hit low in the Tigers lineup, but... you mentioned his ADP, right? Yeah, 204. That's pretty solid. And I think he would make a great catcher too. Seems like he's one of more of the elite C2s based on the ADP. But the hard hit's good. The EV is good. The barrel rate's 10%. That's awesome for a catcher. So, yeah, I think he's deserving of probably that ADP. And as long as he maintains his skills, he'll be worth it.
Yep, big fan. And he's near the top of the catcher too. So it's one of those that, in my mind, if you want to get aggressive and make sure if you don't get two catcher ones per se, grabbing the Dingler goes a long ways because he could take the jump to catcher one. He's that close, in my opinion. All right, Luke Kuechel. This is one I really want to get your opinion because I have a share. I think only one. I was told it's dead weight according to the King. Finished the season with 4 homers, 14 steals, 302 average, and 49 games, 207 plate appearances. In the second half of the season, Kuechel hit 294 with 4 homers and 9 steals and 181 plate appearances. He was on base all the time, it felt like, at one point. And right now, Luke Kuechel has an ADP of 145, Ben, over the last 10 drafts at a second base position that's pretty rough. So I can kind of understand if people say it's dead weight, but where are you at on Luke Kuechel? Because to me, it's a combination of good average, some power, lots of speed, and a bad position.
Yeah, I think Kuechel gets boosted up because of second base and how bad it is. Well, he definitely gets boosted up for that reason. The average of 302 on the whole year, which was probably mostly second half, his XBA was 265, so that's almost a 40-point gap. which is a lot. And I would lean that, well, his K rate was 14th percentile as a whole, Kiechel's. It was in the second half, it was almost just 15% roughly. But the EV was less than 86 miles per hour from him. His barrel rate was only 4.4%. The hard hit was 29.9%. And that's been the thing I've heard a lot of people talking about with Kiechel whenever I hear him mention it somewhere, is this is the power's in question.
Yep.
So I would have liked to have seen a higher XBA than 263, because I wanted to be like Nico Horner probably. And I think Horner usually has better underlying average metrics than what Kiechel would have. But the K rate's awesome for him. So, and he's young. It was his rookie year. So there's a, he's only 23. So there's a good chance that the more playing time that he maybe gets a little more power, and then he gets, makes a little better contact to get that XBA higher, and hopefully it results in an actual higher average. And the speed is really what's appealing with him, because his sprint speed was 85th percentile. And I owe a lot to Kiechel because I had him on that main event that did pretty well. So I would be biased going into the year, but looking, but I don't want to get too ahead of what he did at the end of last year, just based on the underlying numbers. So he'll be a tough one for me to rank, I think. But one of the positives too is that he's projected to hit third for the Twins, which is really nice. And that's not really a spot you'd have a guy with minimal power hitting. So maybe he hits like second instead, but either way, that's an awesome spot for Kiechel.
Yeah, look at the Twins lineup. They might not have any options right now. what I will throw out there, though, so Kiechel's ADP is around 145, 146. Nico Horner's is 118. So, and I like Nico, too. I am a big fan of Nico Horner because of what he does batting average steals-wise. And they are a very similar profile, to your point. Does the question, I guess, does Luke revert to the underlying metrics is the question at hand. And that's the gamble.
Well, now you said that the 145, and it brought me back to last season, and that in that range it was Stott, Jimenez, Bryce Turang, who all had similar profiles to Kiechel, but maybe not the average upside. Well, Turang ended up having a career year, so he kind of blew through that average, but Jimenez and Stott weren't necessarily guaranteed to be good average hitters either, but they have the speed that Kiechel has, so maybe that's a fair price for him now that I think about it.
Yeah, I guess the second base, the speed average combo kind of, I think, not dictates, but kind of puts him in that position. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about another youngster. Trying to figure out youngsters is so much fun. Jacob Marcy, some are calling the next PCA. Marcy, in the second half last season, where he spent most of his time with the team, finished with a 292 average, 5 homers, 14 steals, with 33 ribbies and 28 runs scored. Ben, Jacob Marcy has an ADP of 145, going right behind Luke Kiechel, actually, in ADP as we speak. I thought Marcy would be going even higher, and he has creeped up through draft season, don't get me wrong, but I thought there'd be a massive hype train behind him. Where are you at on a guy like Jacob Marcy? He's got to play in Miami, but the skills look pretty, pretty good from what we saw in that small sample.
That's surprising that they have the roughly the same ADP. Because I feel like Marcy has more power, and based on the underlying metrics, yeah, Marcy has almost double the barrel rate that Kiechel had. Marcy's was 8% in the second half, with a better XBA too. His XBA was 278. His K rate was worse. It was 20% for Marcy, but that's not bad though. It's just higher than what Kiechel was doing. So I'm surprised at that. Maybe it's probably because of the second base and people are just pulling up the second baseman, which I understand. I don't think I would necessarily do that though, because I'd rather have the better player, and it seems like Marcy is the better player right now.
Did
he have a platoon issue, Marcy? No, he actually played a lot.
Yeah, he played every day pretty much.
Yeah, so that keeps him, and the Marlins are probably going to want to give him as much time to develop as possible. So I think, Marcy would, as of now, he'd probably be a pretty good target of mine, because it's not like he has no power based on the 8% barrel rate. So I think he's not going to be PCA like what PCA was last year, but he could be like a lesser degree of what happened with PCA potentially.
For sure. All right, let's go to Brett Beatty. There's questions about playing time with the Mets, but again, a lot of moving parts still in New York. We saw Beatty play first base, second base, third base, all over the place, which was great at times for fantasy. I even bought into Beatty, and it was because of the second half that Brett Beatty had. He hit 291 with 9 home runs and 4 steals in the second half, Ben, with 31 runs scored and 20 RBIs, finally showing some of that pedigree people have hoped for a long time. Beatty enters 2026 as second base, third base eligible. So that's clutch already, with an ADP of around 252, Ben. Now, again, we're still trying to figure out Is he locked into playing time? Like we thought second base. Well, now Simeon's in. Is he at third base while Vientos is at first? That's what they have for now. But again, do they bring Big Meat Pete back? Like there's a lot of stuff that could screw up Beatty's potential playing time. But as of now, with that ADP, what are your thoughts on what we saw in the second half from Beatty and going into 2026?
Definitely risky to take him right now, hoping that he is the starter. I could very well see Lonzo going back to the Mets, and then to your point, maybe Vientos goes to DH, and then Mauricio isn't playing.
Perfect storm, but, yes.
Agreed. Yeah, but Mauricio is a pretty big prospect as well. One thing, this will help Beatty overall, but it'll hurt him at the same time, is that he kind of platooned versus righties last year. His percentage versus righties was slightly over 80%. So like I said earlier, I try to look at 80% as kind of like the cutoff. So he's right on that edge of being a platoon bat, Beatty. Good barrel rate in the second half, but he had he was like Framber as a hitter. He had a 56.8% ground ball rate, a 24% fly ball rate. Hard hit was pretty good. It's just that when he hit it, it was on the ground, it seemed like. Good XBA for Beatty. I'm surprised he stole some bases. You know, I think you mentioned 4 steals in the second half for him, so that's helpful. Which makes sense where his ADP is right now. But, yeah, he could be victim to some signings for the Mets. So I'd just be cautious and not, like, take Beatty in every draft right now. But there's some upside there. I just think there's also a risk that he becomes a bench bat.
Yep, that's why I don't have any I love the profile. Like I said, I bought into it in Fab Leagues. Draft day at this point in time, I have a very difficult time because I also could see him getting traded, and maybe he plays a lot. Maybe he's a bench bat where he gets traded because the Mets are looking for pitching help. There's a lot of, like I said, the Mets aren't done, and I don't know where the dust settles. Like, in theory, Beatty should be playing somewhere. He's 26 years old. Like, he needs to get a shot, but where's that somewhere? $1 million question right now. All right, Dominic Canzone. I'm really curious your thoughts here because I stare at his name in the draft rooms all the time. Like, he finished the season 300 average, 11 homers, 3 steals, which was great. In the second half of the season, we saw Canzone hit 289 with 5 homers, 2 steals. His ADP is 338 right now. He's majority a platoon guy. We know, like, he's going to sit versus lefties more often than not. But still, at an ADP of 338, Ben, in a draft champions format, a strong side platoon bat with those batting average power skills, that appeals to me. Now, should I buy into that on this Mariners team? What are your thoughts on what we saw from Canzone?
He's interesting, Canzone. So you mentioned the platoon, but he actually had more plate appearances or fewer plate appearances versus righties than Beatty and whoever we talked about before that. Who was it? It was Beatty and
Marcy.
Marcy. Canzone had more at bats versus lefties than those guys, at least percentage wise. His average, 300 overall in the year. So I'm sure the second half boosted that up a lot for him. But just, I wouldn't say he's necessarily an average asset because his BABIP was 354 last year. And then in 2023 and 2024, Canzone hit 220 and then 196. So he was kind of like a free swinger, or his K rate was almost 30% 2 years ago in 2024. And looking at last year, his O swing, so his chase rate was over 40%, which is pretty bad. Overall, his contact rate was only 73%, which is also bad. But when he hit the ball, he hit it really hard. But the Ks didn't really follow. His K rate was slightly below 25%, which isn't awful for him. So I guess at that price, though, with all that said, I think it's a decent price for Canzone because he's just projected to hit full-time per roster resource right now for the Mariners and hitting fifth because the bottom of the lineup does not have a lot of pop. But if they bring back Suarez, and that'll move Canzone down. So I wouldn't bank on him hitting fifth for the Mariners going into the next year, but there's a chance. And I think he's a decent outfield. He could be your five at that point, but I think he'd rather be my six.
Yeah, at that point, you could probably hopefully be your sixth or even seventh at that point, depending on how you go about it, for sure. But his name stands out. I always wonder with Randy and J-Rod, is like Victor Robles platoon with them, or – where do they move the parts around? And they have a ton of outfielders in the minors. It's one thing they have plenty of in Seattle. Hunter Goodman, catcher number 2 on the show for those keeping track in your drinking games. Hunter Goodman was a star last year, 278 average, 31 homers, 91 RBIs. Just amazing stuff. But in the second half, dude hit 279 with 14 homers. Like, it wasn't just he had a hot streak. He did it all season long, Hunter Goodman did. Right now, Goodman's got an ADP of 77, Ben, going 7 picks after 1 Ben Rice who I think could be one of the best catchers in the game this season for fantasy. What are your thoughts on Hunter Goodman? I just wanted to bring it up because I wanted to talk about it out loud for those that keep speculating on Goodman. The average was great. Do we expect this to continue? What are your thoughts?
I think I quoted, or one of the things I said in the Discord was, would Goodman catch what Nolan Jones caught in 2024 and then what Brenton Doyle and Ezekiel Tovar caught last year? Because although those three guys were all Rockies who broke out, and then the next year they had much higher ADPs and they all did not return value, which I'm worried it would happen with Goodman. I don't think his metrics are as bad as those guys were, because his XBA was still 247, which isn't horrible. The K rate is high at 26%, but it's not like it's 30%. It's manageable. This is on the year as a whole. In the second half, Goodman was actually 25.6 K rate, and his XBA was 246 actually again, which is kind of ironic, almost the exact same thing. He chases a little bit. His O swing is almost 40%. Contact is even worse than Canzone's. It's 70.5% last year in the second half for Goodman. So there's a lot of risk there going with him going at the start of the sixth round in a 15, and then as your catcher one. He has the barrel rate, though. You just got to hope that Coors will mask some of the things I just mentioned. He doesn't really walk a lot either. But that's okay if his average is good. You just don't want him to not walk a lot and then have a bad average, because then that's going to absorb a lot more into your team's average being bad. So, yeah, he'll be a tough one for me to get a gauge on. I think Rice is significantly better for fantasy this upcoming season. So the fact that that close is kind of interesting to me. Maybe the people to see Coors, and that's enough for them. But I, like I said, with the other three guys who I mentioned before, Tovar, Doyle, and Nolan Jones, he could easily collapse Goodman. And like we said with Tolia earlier, Coors can't mask a lot of contact issues. Not that Goodman's are that bad, but they're not the best. So just got to be careful.
Yeah, Coors is a hell of a drug, Ben. It's a hell of a drug for people drafting. So
get out of least Coors. It'll be his new drug.
That would be a really good one, actually. I am intrigued by Goodman. I'm just wondering if the average sticks. The average drops down. He's still very good, but he groups up with some other guys for me at the catcher's position. A few more to go here. Ramon Laureano, coming off a career year, or at least since 2019. He hasn't played, I guess, 24 homers, 7 steals, hit 281. In the second half of the season, Laureano hit 278 with 13 of those home runs and 3 steals as he helped the Padres get to the postseason. He was a big factor there. Padres already brought him back, which is a plus, so he should be starting every day. ADP is 233 right now for Laureano. This is one of those where, as you get farther down in ADP, Ben, you start slowly getting into platoon guys. Laureano on paper shouldn't be a platoon guy. So that 233 ADP with that production, it's kind of always been either a playing time slash health thing for Laureano. We saw in the second half with the full run, basically getting cleanup, he cleaned up, basically. So where are you at on Laureano?
That seems like a pretty good price for him, that 233. I like how you made the point that he won't platoon, which could be an issue with like Lyle that we mentioned before, and whoever we mentioned, Beatty could be in a platoon. He's going a little bit after Laureano, it sounds like. Yeah, and that's an advantage of being a right-handed hitter. I said that up with Ted. Righties are sometimes better than lefties.
He's drafted on ESPN right now. Don't worry about it.
Okay, good. He's taking I didn't have a lefty on hand that I could burn him with. It's all right, though. So, yeah, I like Laureano. And even looking at the second half numbers, his barrel rate was almost 17%. Hard hit was over 50%. So everything looked really good, quality of contact-wise, for Laureano. So it seems like it was supported by skills, and maybe he's finally the player that we were hoping for all those years ago. I don't know if the speed's going to be there for Laureano, but at that price, and he's hitting in the top half of the lineup for the Padres, he should be a pretty good deal.
Yep, I'm a big fan of that ADP right now. If you can circle that and somehow pull it off, all aboard that train. Jeremiah Jackson had quite the coming out party in the second half at 276, 5 homers, 20 runs, 21 RBIs. Did not steal a base, surprisingly. Struck out 27.3% of the time. Felt like he kind of slowed down a little bit towards the end of the season. Like, he was so good for a while there. But his ADP, Ben, this is where it's interesting with Jeremiah Jackson. His ADP is 545 over the last 10 drafts. Now, some more context there. Great second half, but they just picked up Taylor Ward. It's like he's Jackson's probably platooning with Dylan Beavers now, so it's not a full-time gig. Still more dominoes could fall. But what we saw in the second half, Ben, with an ADP of 545, does that still interest you with Jeremiah Jackson?
Yeah, I pulled up the roster resource for the Orioles, and he's projected to be on the bench right now in the short side platoon, Jackson. Well, the Ward trade does not help him at all. That's a lineup spot that was taken away. They'll have Holiday and Westbrook at second and third, Gunner at short, probably Mayo at first, so the infield isn't an option for Jackson. Beavers is supposed to start in the outfield for them. Then they have Couser in center. Yeah, so their lineup's pretty much settled right now, the Orioles. And I guess if you want to have Jackson as a injury replacement, because he's probably one of the first guys off the bench for the Orioles if someone gets hurt, and he has that versatility. And he will. And this is the reason why he's on the list. His BABIP was 365 on the year last year, which is basically the second half for him. So he got a lot of good luck with that. His K rate was relatively high. It was 27.3%. A lot of ground balls, not a lot of contact overall. So that BABIP really fueled his place on this list for Jackson. And yeah, I don't. At some point, you have to take guys in DCs that aren't actually going to be starting. I don't know if I would choose Jeremiah Jackson to be my guy, though, just based on the skills, because I think he had some good luck last year.
Yep, he ran real hot. I think there's still some skills there. ADP is intriguing, but playing time, hashtag win, is the question. We'll have to see how that goes. Again, plan for Tyler O'Neill to miss half the season, but there's other moving parts in Baltimore. Maybe Jackson gets traded. We'll see. This is a name that people probably didn't think they were tuning into the show to hear, but when it comes to draft and hold degeneracy or 15-team league fab wires, Jared Triolo checks boxes. Just going to throw it out there. I remember I've written him up for DC late-round targets and whatnot. Jared Triolo, if you just look at his regular stat line, in 107 games, 227, 7 homers, 13 steals. Season before, hit 9 homers, 8 steals in 125 games, went in 216. Doesn't light the world on fire, Ben. But if you look at his second half, Triolo hit 276, 4 homers, 8 steals, scored 29 runs for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Projected to be their starting third baseman. He has first base, third base, and shortstop eligibility, Triolo does, with an ADP of 423. Like, that's fantasy goal in a draft and hold. Like, that flexibility, and for now, has a starting gig towards the top of a batting order at ADP 423, and we saw some pretty solid games from a guy in his, technically his second to third, the sentence of what you consider full seasons, in the game. I'm very excited to see what we could get from Triolo at that ADP. Where are you at on Jared Triolo?
I would be too. One thing, I know Rob DiPietro has always said this. I remember listening to him say it last year or this year at the end of the season with Triolo, is how like Triolo will do nothing for the first half of the year, and then he just plays in the second half for the Pirates and he does well. Kind of happened 2 years in a row. He was like below 50 at bats last in 2025 in April, May, June, but then he, at least in August, September, he had, I think, at least 80 at-bats in both months, and he was playing all the time. That's how he got all that production you mentioned earlier. But as long, and I kind of said this with Horwitz, I don't think the Pirates will be signing anybody unless it's McCutchen for the 10th year in a row. So Triolo should have a spot, assuming, I don't know who else will play third base for them. And that eligibility is great. That price was great. You mentioned the 400s ADP. So and he has some speed and isn't a zero with the power, I don't believe. Yeah, his barrel rate 6.6%, but that's a few homers every now and then for Triolo. And there isn't any red in any of his metrics that I pulled up on my sheet. A couple green. The walk rate was actually pretty good. The O swing, he doesn't chase a lot. So he's just a decent player, and I think that's, like you said, definitely DC gold.
Yep, most definitely. All right, a few that Ben added to the sheet. And to clarify right out the gate, the first one's a catcher that I originally had down. I took it off because I didn't want to be called the catcher guy too often. So I'm glad Ben put him back on the list, because Kyle Teal is one of my favorite catching two targets. Him and Dingler, I actually have a team with both of them as my two catchers because I missed that on the elite rush. Big Kyle Teal fan. If you're a Boston Red Sox fan, maybe, you know, earmuffs, fast forward, whatever you prefer on this one. Crochet is good, though. It worked out. Teal finished the season, 8 homers, 3 steals, 273. If you combine AAA and the bigs, 16 homers, 10 steals, hit like 280, which is pretty good. In the second half last season, Ben, when Teal took over the role as starting catcher, hit 288, 8 homers and 2 steals and 210 plate appearances for the White Sox. Big fan of that kind of production. And right now, Kyle Teal has an ADP of 192, Ben. I think this is like a Goose light. Well, it's kind of weird. Goose has more power. Both will run. Teal hits for more average. If you compare those two together, I think you have a heck of a 1-2 punch at the catching position.
Yeah, Bubba's moving in the chair. He's getting all excited talking about Kyle Teal.
Yep, I love this guy.
Yeah, I was going through the list. I'm like, oh, yeah, I feel like why isn't Bubba calling out Kyle Teal? But then, of course.
I had him on the initial list. Trust me. I was like, no, I'll take him off. This is too easy.
Well,
I love it.
Yeah. The one thing, but at this price, and he's a catcher, is that he doesn't play all the time versus lefties, Teal, which is fine. But because they also have Edgar Caro, and the two of them were kind of splitting between catcher and DH, which is fine for fantasy. If they both play every day, I'll take it. That's two extra catchers that you have in the player pool that are full-time. And Teal had pretty good metrics across the board. Contact was a little bit low, and the EV was a little low. But great barrel rate, 9% in the second half. His XBA was 241, which you could outproduce that to 250 or 260 pretty easily, especially if you hit the ball relatively hard. Doesn't strike out a whole lot, but yeah, he did improve it as he started playing more in the second half, Teal. So yeah, I think he would be someone I'll be targeting too once I get drafting.
Yep, big fan. Matt Shaw of the Chicago Cubs. It was an up and down season for Matt Shaw, but the reason we're doing this little exercise is if you look at his stat page, it was 226 average, which you don't like to see, 13 homers and 17 steals. But Matt Shaw in the second half, Ben, looked like a brand new man. He hit 258 with 11 homers and 6 steals, 29 runs, 29 RBIs. That plays very well, Ben, especially in a bad third base position and an ADP of around 185 right now. So I guess lazy man math, if you combine the second half last year, you project out, we're talking like 25-14 or something. Like, that's pretty, pretty solid. Where are you at on Matt Shaw? Because he even had like 20-20 hopes entering last season's draft season.
It's a little high. I'm surprised the ADP is back up above 200 when he didn't really do a whole lot to deserve it, but that's what happens in these early
seasons. Sharps are drafting.
Yeah, they're probably just seeing, okay, yeah, he had a good second half when he got called back up, and that would explain it, I guess. Shaw, you mentioned the pace roughly if over a full season, and that's why I want to mention, because he has that speed at third base that's hard to come by, and he had, I think his WRC plus was like 120. That's what I was looking at when I pulled off my name, just looking at WRC plus. And the underlying metrics weren't the best in the second half. Like, the EV was kind of low, but the barrel rate was 10% for him. Hard hit was low at the same time, so that kind of correlates with the EV, but he was lifting the ball pretty well. His fly ball rate was 46%, so he was trying to hit for power, it looks like. And he only struck out 24% of the time, which may be high to some, but it's not that high in today's game. So, and Shaw walked 8% of the time in the second half, so that's a pretty good K and walk rate for a rookie. And if he's past pick 200, I'd be a lot more interested, I'm sure, but I'll see what happens when I get drafting. But someone I'll be open to drafting for sure.
Bad third base position will push him up, unfortunately. Kyle Manzardo, again, glad you put this one on there, because I was literally before my last pick looking at his name. Very intriguing. Finished the year with 27 homers, hit 234, ended up getting regular playing time by the end of the season, at least the strong side of the platoon, but started seeing a lot of at-bats later on. I remember the Guardians also faced a ton of righties, it felt like, later in the year that we talked about. But when you look at the second half for Manzardo, he did look like he was getting comfortable at 256 with 12 of those 27 home runs, 33 RBIs, struck out only 26%. I say only, seems good for a guy of his stature, improving. His current ADP is 236, Ben. Again, first base does dry up, could be your first one off the bench, could be a corner infielder. How do you feel about Manzardo, who could fall back into a platoon potentially, but we saw the power, even if he is in a platoon, strong side, very good.
Yeah, definitely. His that percentage in the second half at least was 82%. Or no, this is for the year, 82% versus righty. So definitely a lean platoon for his plate appearances. I remember there was this one series where the Guardians had three lefties to start the week, and everyone was adding David Fry because he was platooning with Manzardo, and Manzardo didn't play the entire first half of the week. It was as extreme as it gets in terms of platoons for him at times. But yeah, the barrel rate was almost 12% in the second half. He leaned into the fly balls, only 29.7% ground ball rate for Manzardo. Hard hit was almost 48%. So yeah, definitely great power numbers. And I don't think 236 is too terrible. I just like to stay away from the platoons as long as I can. But at a certain point, for like we said, first bases kind of dries up pretty quickly. And as I'm scrolling, the next first baseman is Luis Arraez. So I would definitely I'd rather have Vanzardo at that ADP than Arias later, for sure. So it's just it's all relative, I guess. But yeah, I think Vanzardo could be interesting, especially with that power. Like 27 homers, that's a pretty good amount.
Yep, definitely agree with you there. Last one we have here, Miguel Vargas, a guy that was drafted in a lot of DCs for me. He was a fab up and down throughout the entire season for many, it felt like. Like, he finished the season 16 homers, 6 steals, hit .234. You're like, okay. But he was hurt a lot, especially in the middle of the season. Finished pretty strong, though, Ben. In 45 games in the second half, Miguel Vargas hit .267 with 6 homers and 2 steals, 36 runs scored. And he only struck out 18% of the time in that second half, which is also a plus. He enters 2026, Miguel Vargas does, with first base, third base eligibility, and an ADP of 291. Where are you at on a guy like Miguel Vargas? Because it's a former, like, kind of, you know, Michael Busch-type prospect with the Dodgers that finally got his first run of playing time this year.
Definitely, yeah. He's only going to be 26. His name's been around for a while now. Projected hit fourth for the White Sox, which is awesome. Even though it's a bad team, I like those plate appearances. And I think I saw his ADP is like 290. Vargas, yeah, 291, which that's like a corner, which I think he profiles pretty well as. Yeah, and then in the second half, his underlying metrics for Vargas were awesome. There, a lot of green on my sheet. Barrel rate over 10%, XB at 265, XWOBA 345. The walk and the K rates were awesome. I know you mentioned the K rate. If you didn't mention the walk rate, it was almost 12%, which is phenomenal. Not a lot of ground balls, doesn't chase a lot, makes good contact, or frequent contact, that is. So, yeah, I think Vargas, and with the dual eligibility, first and third, I think he's a great target.
Yep, I'm with you. I'm starting to buy in more and more on that flexibility slash I believe in the upside last year. Why should I stop now? Type situation. Going to play a ton with the White Sox. All right, Ben, we'll wrap it up there. Nice little exercise. Looking at some second half players going through things. Maybe we'll do some pitchers next week, or I'll think of something else. But before we wrap up, any final thoughts? Hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving. If you're celebrating, if not, just stay safe and enjoy your break if you have one. But any final thoughts, Ben?
Yeah, I'm surprised some Canadians listen to the show, so they won't be having the day off, unfortunately. But
They get their other Thanksgiving, so they still get to celebrate it.
Yeah, I think there's a Columbus Day, right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, which makes sense, I guess. Yeah, so this could be a nice little second half, or like a DC. Well, they're not all going that late in DCs as we went through the ADP, but some of them kind of fall late. So, yeah, interesting list to look at, and maybe as you're drafting, or you being the listeners as well, maybe these guys stand out a little bit more as you're looking through your picks.
Yep. That's why I started making this list. It was kind of a selfish slash questions I've seen bantered around of kind of names you stare at in a draft room and go, should I believe what took place conversation? So it's good to bounce things off of you, my friend, and hope you have a happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully all the listeners have a happy Thanksgiving. We'll be back with you guys next week with our normal show. Again, there will be a second show this week talking NFBC 50s, the 12-team draft and hold format, coming out on Wednesday for you all. And then on Bubba and the Bloom, Tuesday night, a live draft champions primer kind of podcast. And then we're going to pre-record the Thanksgiving episode. It might come out Friday of our post 500 targets. So it's a draft and hold week across the Bubba Bloom Bench with Bubba podcast world. So check it all out. Follow Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm @BDentric. Until next time, this was Bench with Bubba episode 792. Catch y'all later.